I had my children. I've got three children, Evie, who's 10, and Samson and Rachel, who are 9-year-old twins. And we were a bit busy with them for a few years, so we kind of put off coming back just until they're a little bit older and we didn't need to have three pushchairs and three high chairs and all that sort of stuff.
And I guess the name Samson is obviously Samson. Because of Samson Silly?
Indeed. So most people, when they hear the name Samson, they assume it's Samson and Delilah. And of course it's not. It's Samson the Island. So it's only actually when we're here that it makes sense as a name, really. But yes, we wanted to call one of our children after a Solonian island.
Explain to us what it was like having a granddad who had run the country. Because not everybody can make that claim, can they?
They can't. And I suppose all I can say really is that whatever you're used to is what is normal. All the way through my childhood, whether it was here in Scilly, being on holiday with him here, or I grew up in Oxford, so quite often he and Grandma would come to Oxford and they'd take us out for lunch or whatever. I just got used to the fact that people would always want to go up to him and say hello and bend his ear about something, say something positive, sometimes say something negative, but it was just part of my childhood. But I grew up with a real sense of pride, I think, of having had I think when I was really young, a famous grandfather, but as I've got older, you kind of get a different perspective in life, don't you, as you get older and you realise, actually, yes, he was someone who did good things and made big changes in the country, so... So yes, that was my experience.
Was it weird seeing people like Mike Yarwood on TV doing an impersonation of your granddad?
Yes. Again, it's something that I know my parents always—they were quite impressed with his interpretation of granddad. So less so with some others, but it's strange. And yes, even now there are various, you know, there are films and TV films that will have a portrayal of granddad done by someone or other, and they're normally quite uncanny and normally quite good, actually. But yes, very strange.
I was wondering about that, because often when you see somebody presented in the public eye, there is, particularly with impersonators, that take elements of the person. And if you know somebody really closely and you observe them when they're not on, as it were, performing, you'll see them very differently. So I wonder when you've seen your grandfather portrayed on TV, whether you think, well, that's not him at all. The walk's wrong or little bits just aren't right.
Yes, I suppose you do know the rounded person, and then they're not quite as they would be portrayed. Granddad was someone who, I think, actually, to be perfectly honest, he was in some ways a bit like the cliche of how you'd expect him to be. So yes, he did wear the Gannex raincoat, although not on Scilly, I don't think. I think he'd wear an anorak when he was here. He did have HP sauce on everything, so that cliche is definitely true. So some of the things, and he smoked his pipe all the time, so yes. But just as an ordinary figure, yes, he was just an ordinary person who behind the scenes got on with life as we all do, and in Scilly, he was particularly able to do that. And I know that one of the things that he loved so much about these islands, and which Grandma still loves, is the fact that you can just relax and be yourself and take things at a slightly different pace. And he loved that.
And that, I guess, was the attraction, because to some extent more so than most places in England, certainly you can be cut off and people can cut you off as well, can't they?
Yes, definitely. I know that I think they were meant to be coming here on their honeymoon, and that they weren't able to because of the Second World War. So they deferred that, and they first started coming to Scilly, I think, in the late 50s, and they had the bungalow that Grandma still has now, which I've been staying in. That was built in the 60s at some point, when they realised actually it was somewhere they really did want to carry on coming down to. But there's nowhere else like it, really, I don't think. Grandma still maintains that Scilly is home, even though she's not here a huge amount now. This is her home, you know? And ridiculous as it may sound, and even though I only come with my husband and children every other year, it's still our second home, you know, it's where we want to be and it's where we can really switch off. So that, I think that's one of my abiding memories, growing up with Grandma and Grandad able to take a bit of a sigh of relief and be here and be themselves, dress down, see people in the street and just have a chat, but without any of the pressures of the lives that they normally had.
But were you aware of his status beyond locals coming up and knowing who he is? Because actually quite a lot of people on the islands, whether you're the police officer or the school head teacher, you might have that kind of greeting as well from locals. But were you aware growing up and staying in the house, were there extra people around, security people, that type of thing?
Yes, there were. When I was younger. So I guess until maybe the 80s when it wasn't so necessary, when I was maybe sort of 5, 6, 7, that kind of age. Earlier on, certainly there was always a police detective in tow as well. So we'd go off to the beach with all of us and our rucksacks and our thermoses, and the dog. But we'd also have another person in tow, just to kind of keep an eye on things.
Did your granddad ever try and make you want to follow a political path at all?
No, I don't think so. I think actually you just see what a toll it can take, and I think you'd have to really be very passionate and very sort of forthright in your views to be able to be a politician. I think anyone who does it is amazing, because I certainly couldn't. And I know that my father, so this is Robin, the older of Grandma and Granddad's two sons, was certainly very kind of almost anti-political, I think, due to his upbringing. But yes, it's not a career I think many people should go for unless it's a vocation, really, I suppose.
Do you ever remember him, I don't know, having an outburst at the TV?
Oh, that's a really good question. No, I don't. I don't. I wouldn't say that he wasn't really a sort of passionate politician. I think his convictions were very deeply held, but I don't think he was someone who would like to kind of make a song and dance about things particularly. So no, I don't have any memories particularly of him having an outburst at the telly.
Have you read any press reports? The Daily Mail is always reporting about the 70s and politicians.
Yeah.
Have you ever read things and think, you've got that so wrong, that's just utter rubbish?
Yes, I have, I think. I think, life isn't black and white, is it, really? So you get, everything is more nuanced, really. And so I think particularly the tabloid newspapers are very good, aren't they, at presenting things in a particular way. And actually, life's not like that, and any decisions that politicians make, and this goes for these days as well, really, things happen for a reason, and you make your decisions based on the evidence and, what you consider is to be right.
But can you recall anything that you've read and thought, well, that's just made up, that's just not true? I mentioned it. I'll tell you why I thought of this.
Yeah,
when they announced that Cilla Black had died, I thought of your gran. Because I remember talking to your grandmother about, and we're not obviously talking ill of Cilla Black, but
no.
Your grandmother was interviewed by spin doctors, I presume you'd call them that now,
yeah.
When they went into Downing Street and they had to write an article for Woman's Own or some magazine. And she had to write about her love of music. And I think, from memory, she said she liked Aretha Franklin, and they changed it. They changed it to Cilla Black, and she was told it had to be a British artist, and she was really unhappy about that. And that was something that, we spoke, this was years ago, that she wanted to put right.
Yeah.
So have you...
Not that she didn't like Cilla Black, I'm sure
no,
she probably
but,
did as well.
But it wasn't what she wanted to convey,
no.
It wasn't her opinion. So you can't recall anything that you've seen and thought, well, people never would have said that, they've just made that up.
Not specifically, I don't think, no.
There's been a lot of stories about him being worried about potential risk of South African authorities blackening his name because of his stance on apartheid. Again, was that something that you remember, you recall?
I think there was a lot of paranoia around in the 70s, and I think that was the climate in which he was doing his stuff. So I think, I don't know whether he was a little bit paranoid about some things, but certainly... I know, for example, me and my twin sister Jen were on the IRA's hit list, and we had to check underneath our cars at various times for bombs and
good
this sort of
grief.
Thing.
Good grief. How long for? How long did that last
there
for?
Was a particular point, I think, sort of maybe late 70s, where things were a little tricky, a little dicey, and we thought, actually, obviously my sister and I were too young, but my parents were quite worried about, things that might be happening. But, part of this is, you know, I'm now 40, and a lot of this is, you know, things that I've heard my parents talking about. I do remember a particular time when we had to have the police over when I was quite young, growing up in Oxford, and they were checking under the car and sort of taking seriously our concerns and so forth. So, you know, I don't know how much of it was just hype and speculation and how much of it actually was lots of undercurrents of bad stuff going on. Well, who's to say?
It's a different era, though, wasn't it? I mean, because we had politicians killed in the Commons car park in the... Might have been the early 80s. Mm. The Cold War, of course, there were trawlers
in
the waters off these islands, eavesdropping. So,
yeah.
There's a lot of speculation why your granddad decided to resign. Does the family have a clear, definitive answer about that?
So he resigned in 1976. So actually, he's resigned, I think, on his 60th birthday, which also happened to be just the same weekend as me and my sister turned one. So we had a big birthday party in Chequers, you know, like you do for your first birthday party, cake and everything, press. Lord Tony Pandy was sitting there in the background of my birthday photos. So he resigned, and I think he always maintained, certainly the view that I have, he always maintained that he would go when he was 60. And that's what he did. So he reached 60 and he went. And I don't think there was anything else behind that. Having said that, having retired, he took a very sudden sort of nosedive down health-wise, and he really wasn't well, really, for the remainder of his life. He had Alzheimer's disease, as probably lots of people listening to this will know. And I think pretty much it's one of those things that when you're Prime Minister, it must be so full on all the time, and you go straight from 100 miles an hour to nothing. And I think it really affected him. So I don't know whether he had an inkling at that point when he decided he wanted to go that perhaps he was losing, you know, his sharpness, or whether that just happened as soon as he did stop being PM. But either way, it was quite a rapid deterioration, and a really sad one as well, because he was such a fierce intellect, such an amazingly clever man. And he lost it, really, as the time went on. I feel quite sad, because by the time I was old enough, I suppose, to maybe have sensible conversations with him, not necessarily about politics, but maybe about people he knew, or, you know, the kind of broader spectrum of, you know, interesting conversations you have maybe when you're a little bit older, he was really beginning to lose it. So about the age of 11, 12, 13 for me was when his decline grew quite steep, and he didn't know who we were anymore, and that was really sad, because he died when I was 20, so half my life ago now. But for those later years, I didn't know him, he didn't know me, he didn't really know where he was. But I know that when he was in Scilly, he loved being here, and I think he always, you know, being somewhere familiar, I think, was really important to him. And certainly Grandma really appreciated all the support and love that she had from the people here. And she still does, you know, she still comes. Mm. Not very often now, but when she's here, she feels as if she's among friends.
We get lots of people who pay tribute to your granddad who come here. And obviously he's buried here, so I can't really sort of say more so than any other Prime Minister you might expect, because obviously it's skewed towards Harold Wilson, the island.
Well, quite.
That said, I don't know whether you get this with other Prime Ministers, but there's a lot of people that do specifically seem to come over, and they might be coming to Scilly anyway, but it's something that they have to do. It's on their tick list of things to do in Scilly.
Yeah.
That, I guess, being his granddaughter, doesn't surprise you, but it does seem extraordinary compared to most politicians, because most don't seem to have... I suppose the other end of the spectrum, you might have Mrs. Thatcher, who might evoke that kind of response from people.
Yes.
There's not many others, are there?
Well, I know that we live not far in Oxfordshire from Winston Churchill's grave. And I know that, you know, you get all the American tourists going there. That's on a tourist trail. Obviously, Scilly is slightly different because it's a little off the beaten track and you wouldn't come here specifically. But I do think it is on people's, you know, radar that one of the things they want to do, even if they come for a day trip, is go and see the grave. So, yeah, I'm probably totally the wrong person to judge how he's regarded now, but you know, speaking to a friend of mine who I've made as an adult, and they maybe eventually find out that I'm his granddaughter, they usually have a good word to say for him, actually. I think he is held in quite high regard, generally.
We tend to find that people say that he was the first Prime Minister that didn't seem like a stuffed shirt, that didn't seem part of the elite ruling class.
The establishment.
Yeah. Would he have liked to have been remembered for that, do you think?
Yes, I think so. And I think he probably played on that image a little bit as well, didn't he? You know, he was the kind of grammar school boy made good. But he was someone who, I think he, as I said earlier, he had real kind of courage in his convictions, and he'd had a relatively lowly start in life, not as lowly as many people, but he'd managed to kind of work his way up right to the top. And maybe that makes you a better politician, I don't know. I think it might do. I have to say at this point that my daughter Evie, the one who's nearly 11, is going to be Prime Minister when she grows up. She's already said that, and I thought I'd just announce that here and now, just so you know.
Get the exclusive.
Yeah. She's had this on her mind for a while. She needs to be an Olympic athlete first, but once she's finished that career, then she's going to be Prime Minister, she says.
It's interesting as well that, just talking about your gran for a second, a lot of Prime Ministers' wives, politicians' wives, are the stand by your man, keep quiet, stand in the background type. And certainly your gran's not, is she?
No.
I mean, yeah, I'm not questioning loyalty, but I mean, in terms of she's got
absolutely
her own mind and own opinion.
Yeah. 100% loyal.
And that must have been quite hard.
I think it's something she always struggled with, actually, because she's her own woman and she had her own opinions, her own thoughts. And I'm sure there were times when she had to button her lip and just keep quiet. I mean, if you look at all the photos from the 60s and 70s, you see her in the background, always there, always smiling, always being supportive. But I don't think it's a role she particularly found easy or enjoyable, shall we say. Granddad was all destined to be an academic in Oxford when he found politics and went off in a different direction. So Grandma married a man she assumed would be in some Oxford college for the rest of his life, and her life turned out rather differently. Certainly when Grandad was PM for the second time, which was 74 to 76, she just refused to go back to number 10. She said, "I'm sorry, I can't live there." So they lived elsewhere for his second term of PM.
Yeah, it must be quite tough when you have to go through it and move to Downing Street, and then, of course, you leave. It's all very public, isn't it? Then the thought of having to go through that process again, if you didn't enjoy it the first time, must be incredibly tough.
I think she knew what she was letting herself in for that time, and it wasn't going to suit her. But having said that, there were some amazing occasions. So my dad turned 21 while Grandad was PM for the first time, I think, and had his 21st birthday party there. So amazing sort of things for us all as a family to look back on and say, gosh, that was quite a time, really.
I suppose it shows how non-compliant in that way your gran is, how she's her own woman, and that she can actually say, actually, I'm not going to live there.
Yes.
Even though it's 10 Downing Street.
I think, you know, as a pairing went, they were a very equal partnership. He listened to her a lot, and I think she wore the trousers in some respects, you know. So, she's an opinionated woman, and she's wonderful. She's 99 now. Her health is failing, really. She's very old, and I think she's feeling quite fed up at how her body isn't really holding up very well anymore. But she's always been someone whose opinion I've cared about. You know, she's had a real life, and a very interesting one for sure. But
Silly, I guess, was a place that they could both agree on.
Yes, so they came routinely from, I can't remember whether it was the late 50s or early 60s, but they came when my dad and my Uncle Giles were already sort of teenagers, certainly. And they had that sort of sense of continuity then, that they would keep on coming back here, especially once they had the bungalow built. So I quite like the fact that actually it's kind of the fourth generation now coming here. So Grandma and Granddad sort of discovered Silly for themselves, as it were. And then my dad and uncle. And then, you know, as I say, we were brought here all the way through our childhood and just loved it. So me and my twin, Jen, would have very carefree, very happy holidays here. And once we grew up, we kept on coming, initially with university friends, then, you know, eventually I came here. I remember coming here for the first time with Will, who's now my husband. And actually I came with Will once I knew that he was kind of, you know, the one. I brought him to Silly because I thought that was important. He should be here.
So previous boyfriends didn't get a look in with Silly.
No. Well, actually one did, but that's totally by the by. So Will came along, but also Jen came. And I think actually Will's first experience of Silly was a little horrific because Jen and I were so enthusiastic about the place. We were saying, oh, let's go here, let's go there. And we kind of ran around the island madly showing him all our favourite bits. And actually, the Silly that we all love really is when you just take your foot off the accelerator and just say, what should we do today? Actually, let's do not very much. Let's just go to the nearest beach. Let's just sit on a rock or go for a rainy walk and just enjoy the quietness. So I think initially we could have actually put him off at that point. Thankfully, he saw that Silly was somewhere he wanted to carry on coming to, and thankfully he wanted to stick with me as well. So, you know, here we are, and we've been married for 13 years now, and we've, you know, as I say, we've got these three children who adore Silly just as much as we do. They just love it here. It's where they want to be in their holidays.
Have you taken them all around Silly and shown your granddad's favourite spots to them?
Yeah, so this morning we went on a walk to Peninnis, and halfway along the path there's a bench that says Harold Wilson, his favourite walk. So we sat there, and I told my little Rachel about how, you know, I do remember going for walks with the dog, with Grandma and Grandad, and, you know, on a sunny morning or a rainy afternoon, we'd go off to Peninnis and go for a nice walk and enjoy the views, really. So, yes, we do, and I share what reminiscences I have of time, both out and about in Silly and also in the bungalow, because, of course, I've got lots of memories of him, you know, sitting around the dinner table with, you know, we'd be eating pasties and he'd be putting way too much HP sauce on his pasty and stuff. One thing that I remember is, it feels like one of those kind of life lessons. He taught me once how to open a can of drink and pour it in such a way that, you know, if you tilt the cup so you don't get lots of froth. So he taught me that skill, and I felt that's a life lesson I learnt from the former PM, you know, that he taught me how to pour my cola properly.
I suspect it might have been learnt from beer, actually.
I think it might have been. I think probably at the same meal that I was drinking cola, he was having his whatever it was he had that was he was partial to.
Might well have been beer with sandwiches and some meeting in Downing Street. That was the
famous
phrase,
yeah, indeed.
So, do you know the exact spots? Because there's lots of suggestion about this, where the Open University vision came to him. Because I've heard people
say
it's walking between the bungalow and Old Town Church down the hill. You and the family might have a definitive answer on this.
I don't think the family necessarily have an answer. I don't know. I haven't conferred on that one. I thought it was him sitting on a beach somewhere, or maybe being on Samson.
It might be.
But then I might be confusing that with there's that kind of famous press conference he had, wasn't there, when he was on holiday in Silly, and the world's media needed to come and, you know, hear what he had to say about something. I can't even remember what it was now. But he said, well, you'll need to come to me and I'm going to be on Samson. And there are photos of him in his shorts and T-shirt sitting in the sand dunes with all the world's press gathered around waiting to hear what he had to say.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people do want to come and pay tribute because of the OU, actually. It made a big influence.
I think the Open University is just a wonderful institution. You may know that my dad, Robin, was... He's retired now, but he was a maths professor and he had a lot of his career at the Open University. I think it was just so forward-thinking. I've actually spent my career as a librarian and now as an administrator. I was at Oxford Brookes University for a long time, Reading University before that. I'm now actually working at Oxford University. But for me, especially in the last decade or so, I've seen how distance learning is a really big thing. And, you know, you get people doing a module of this or a module of that, doing their learning piecemeal to fit in with their lives. And these days it's much easier, of course, because you can have online learning and all this sort of thing. You can submit an assignment electronically and you can have discussions with different groups of students from around the world. All these things are happening around the UK now in different universities. But the OU did it first, and it was so amazing that, you know, you could be someone who had never maybe considered going to university, and actually you could now, and you could do a module of just one thing, which just gradually built up and up to you getting a degree. And there were all those wonderful programs on at 3 a.m.
Yeah.
So people bought their first VHS machine so that they could record the latest episode of whatever it was they were learning, and then watch that back. So really just the most wonderful institution. And now I feel the OU must be really coming into its own, because it's had all that lead up to see, you know, what's the best ways of doing things. And it's an amazing institution. I went once to with my dad to work in Milton Keynes, so I spent a day with him there, and it's a very strange place because it's like a campus but with no students. So the students aren't there, and they've got a library, and me being a librarian, I went in and they've got all the books and everything. No students, but they've had to learn to do things in different ways. So they'd have, say, course packs, or they'd scan when that technology came, they could scan chapters of books or whatever. Now they've got masses of kind of online learning materials, and it's just amazing. And my dad, you know, my dad's got qualifications coming out of his ears. He's a mathematician, and you know, he's spent his career teaching at the OU and also Oxford University, just amazingly bright people doing maths. I'm not a mathematician at all myself, so I'm easily impressed. But he, as time went on, took little modules in this and that, and he now, you know, about 10 years ago or so, he got a degree, a sort of Bachelor of Arts degree. So having always been a scientist and sort of mathematician, he decided to kind of hone his skills in that different way. And I think that's lovely too, that, you know, anyone can do it, from, you know, someone who's already got degrees coming out of their ears to someone who's actually never thought of being at university, but who thinks the time is right for me to fit a bit of this in, a bit of that in, and I can actually better myself, I suppose, and learn.
Think about your time in Scilly with the family. Are there any things that really stand you out as funny occasions? There's lots of stories that go around. The famous one about the paper shop queue with the person complaining about the lack of the supplements.
Oh, do you know what? I was going to mention that
take
one.
It to the Prime Minister.
Don't need to say that, do I? Yeah, he's standing in the queue behind you.
We all
yeah.
know that one.
Yeah.
Can you think of any other ones that really stuck in mind?
That was a classic, wasn't it? And that certainly, I think, can do the rounds for a long time to come. I think the other one that I just remember, just something really kind of quite sweet and poignant, was that when I was 7, I was inconsolable because I'd lost my favourite toy, a little Scotty dog called McTavish, and I'd lost him somewhere on Scilly and was really inconsolable. I'm not sure how long it was I'd lost him for. It might have been 20 minutes or it might have been 2 days, I don't know, but it was one of these things that actually was a really big deal at the time. And Grandad found McTavish for me. He was hiding in the Agapanthus bushes. So that was just sort of a little something that we always remember. And funnily enough, every time we'd come to Scilly after that, I'd always bring McTavish, and he'd always ceremoniously get lost in the Agapanthus bushes, and Grandad would find him. And then we carried on doing it with my children as well. So it's just a little silly thing, really, but it's one of those family traditions that I guess any family has, really, isn't it?
Mm. Do you think there's enough here to mark your granddad's influence on the islands and what he did for the islands? I mean, there's a lot. I mean, there's the Saloni and the loan for the 77 boats.
Yeah.
There's the PR, because of yes. the publicity, which yes. must have been worth millions.
Oh, it must have. Yeah, I mean, if just think about all the people who came to Scilly who would never have done so otherwise. I think that was probably the biggest thing he did. But even now, people still, you know, put Scilly and Harold Wilson together, don't they? So lots of people, most people actually in my life, don't know that I'm Harold Wilson's granddaughter, because it's not something I tend to, you know, I'm very proud of it, but I don't brag about it as such.
No, but nobody would normally introduce themselves as the grandchild
yes,
or somebody,
yes,
would they?
Exactly. So,
unless you're a royal family, maybe.
Yes. Do you know who I am? I'm not like that at all, but I happened to mention to someone a few weeks ago who didn't know who I was related to, that I was going to the Scilly Isles. And he said, oh, that's where Harold Wilson used to go. I said, well, yes, actually, we're staying in his bungalow. And then I explained, you know, that we still went there, but that was something that had happened because we were part of his family and we wanted to go there. So yes, I think that's the biggest legacy. The people he put Scilly on the map, I guess, in some ways. Scilly, I think, probably always has to fights to find its niche, doesn't it? I think it's something that, you know, it's probably not an easy life being a Solonian and living here all year round. It's all very well for fair weather people like me to come along for 2 weeks in the summer and then disappear. But actually to live here and to base your life probably on tourism. Some people base it on other things too, don't they? But actually tourism is massively important. So anything that can bring people to the islands is good.
Should there be some mark of his influence, I don't know, a statue or some kind of physical thing?
There could be. I don't know whether there would be the appetite for it. It's already 20 years since he died.
But there's not a blue plaque or anything, is there?
Well, that's a good point. No. Although people do... people do, you know, point out the bungalow as they go past. I know when any kind of coachload of people goes past the bungalow, they'll all stop and look and take photos. My children find this hilarious when they're playing in the garden there and then suddenly, you know, people are getting their cameras out. There should probably be one of those, I think. Who knows?
I don't know who you go to make that happen.
No. I mean, there are various kind of official... statues. So there's one. There's a lovely one in Huddersfield, outside Huddersfield train station, which is just this gorgeous. I think it's made out of bronze. This lovely kind of very statuesque statue, if I can use that phrase, of him looking. He's looking very dynamic and like he's moving along and striding out and with lots of thoughts. And he's got his hand in his pocket. You can imagine probably his pipe is in his hand in his pocket. There's also a very similar statue in the Houses of Parliament as well. But sometimes, actually, yeah, maybe there is a market for something happening here as well. You know, all the official things are one thing, but maybe there should be something. Certainly next year, which is his centenary of his birth, I know the Parliamentary Labour Party are going to be doing quite a few things to mark that occasion. So there will be things happening in an official capacity, but perhaps it's something that Silly could mark as well and say, even if it's just raising a pint to, you know, a good man who enjoyed his time in Scilly.
He did have what was it called? Was it the Ratio Centre named after him? What was the Lifelong Learning Centre in the Wesleyan Chapel?
It's
now obviously council offices.
Yes.
It was a library for a while as well. I think
that's right, yeah. Yep. So that was something I do remember happening and being named in his honour. I'm fairly sure I was there for the opening of that. Well, I certainly went when that was new. But as with everything in Scilly, I think the thing I find quite lovely about Scilly, actually, is it's always reinventing itself, isn't it, and finding new ways to put buildings and to use. And so things have moved on from that, I guess, a bit. But his legacy is more than just a building or a plaque or whatever.
But nice to just remind people, because there are lots of new people coming all the time.
That's true. Although, you know, I don't know how many people know him. Know his name even anymore. Certainly, you know, the children in my children's primary school, they're not aware of him, really. You know, there are a few prime ministers of the 20th century who would stand out as real names, so they all know Winston Churchill and Margaret Thatcher, but Harold Wilson, maybe not, unless my children have got to them first and told them all about him.
Is there one photo that you think of, perhaps it's one in Scilly, where you think, that's Grandad?
Yes, there's one that that sits in the bungalow as one of Grandad. I'm not sure where he is. He might have been on Samson, actually, but certainly just sort of sitting, staring out to sea, looking windswept. It's just that classic kind of Solonian thing. You've got that. I feel the same as well. So I come to Scilly and I just sit and I on a rock and my thoughts wander. And clearly, he was having a day of having his thoughts wandering, and we all need a bit of space in our lives, don't we, to be able to do that. So that's an image I have. And also, you know, in my mind's eye, maybe not a photo, but I think of him in his shorts and t-shirts and, you know, normally his cagoule as well and his big rucksack on his back, sitting on the beach just puffing away quite happily, sometimes reading the paper, or sometimes just sitting and watching the world go by as my sister and I would be playing on the beach, really.
Is there enough in the museum to document his time in Scilly?
There's a nice little bit. I haven't actually been this time. I went 2 years ago when I came. So they've got a nice little selection of things, haven't they? I think they've got one of his Gannex coats and various other bits and pieces of memorabilia. There are still things in the bungalow. You know, I opened a cupboard the other day, and his golf clubs are still sitting in a cupboard, gathering dust, of course, and his binoculars are sitting in the cupboard waiting to be used. And in fact, when Will and Evie went for a walk all the way around St Mary's the other day, they took the big rucksack that he always used to use. So it's quite nice to feel that, you know, there's still some memorabilia, I think. But I think the museum does a good job, actually, of flagging up who he was and just how he fitted into island life, I guess.
If you're PM, you've got access to, I suppose, well, celebrity, haven't you, really? And I know that the Beatles went to number 10 when he was there.
Yes.
Was there anybody that he was particularly interested in terms of celebrities or music makers, that actually it was quite a perk being PM, having contact with them or getting exposed to their art?
Yeah, I think actually he was... his taste in music were probably pretty... well, he certainly liked... I'm kind of thinking back to the 60s and 70s, and I'm racking my brain to think of particular artists. I think he probably really liked Cilla Black, actually, and all that kind of, you know, the Saturday night entertainment kind of ilk. That was his cup of tea, for sure. So he liked all that. I'm sure he was very, very pleased to have met the Beatles, and it was a nice thing, and I guess my dad and uncle were quite excited about that. Certainly... my children just think it's the best thing ever that, you know, their great granddad met the Beatles. And there's one of the Beatles songs that actually mentions Mr. Wilson at one point. And it's like, that's great granddad. Whenever they hear the song, because we play the Beatles quite a lot. So apart from that, I'm just trying to think whether there are any other people who he met who he was particularly impressed by. I don't think he was the kind of person who was kind of impressed by celebrity per se. Each person would have their merit, wouldn't they? And either he'd get on with them, have a nice chat, or not. But I think at the end of the day, it was his job, and he got to meet interesting people along the way. But pretty cool, I think. Pretty exciting.
Are you planning anything special next year?
We will certainly have... I know there's going to be some service in Poyst St Margaret's Westminster, I think. There'll be something happening at the House of Commons as well. And so all the kind of the big wigs, the Parliamentary Labour Party, they're kind of talking amongst themselves and making things happen. We will also, of course, as a family, need to mark that occasion. Hopefully with Grandma as well. She'll turn 100 before the centenary of Grandad's birth. So her birthday's in January. So hopefully she'll still be with us, and she'll still be in good form, and she'll be able to mark that occasion. March the 11th is actually the centenary date. And there might be big things happening. It might be we'll be in London for something important. But actually, I think really what's more important is just getting together as a family and, you know, just remembering him, really, as a husband and father and grandfather and so forth.
And it must be nice as well, actually, as a mum, showing your children archive material, because certainly if your granddad was out and about and active in the 70s and early 80s, it'd be probably most unlikely now that you'd have that much footage, because
it
was so expensive taking photos, wasn't it?
Because
if you're Prime Minister... people
it's
have got lots
there.
Of Pathé news clips of you.
Yes, there's some glorious Pathé news clips. There's a wonderful one that we came across, my sister and I, about 5 years or so ago, of my parents at their wedding day, and it was pouring with rain. This was in Devon, where my mum had grown up. And, yes, you know, kind of... it's that very traditional kind of Pathé news thing with a very clipped kind of British accent that we don't really have anymore. And they were sort of, you know, remarking on the bride looking radiant, and then, you know, along comes the PM and gives her a kiss and a kiss on the cheek and all this sort of thing. So how wonderful to have that, you know. You can look back at your parents and your grandparents as real people who, yes, I mean, they were in the spotlight, but also they lived and moved and did all these, you know, and had their own lives. I think one thing I found really very remarkable, especially having... from the age of sort of maybe 10 to 20 when he died, I didn't have that clear a sort of mental image of him anymore, because he was just fading in front of our eyes, and he was, you know, physically he was very, he became very frail, but also obviously mentally he was very, very frail. But it was when he died, and at his, first of all, his funeral service, which was here in the parish church, and then also he had a memorial service at Westminster Abbey. And both of those, you know, people would come up to me, all sorts of people, you know. Richard Attenborough, I remember, was sitting opposite me in Westminster Abbey, and I was thinking, now I know him. Where do I know him? Oh, OK, yes, I know who he is. People would come up and they'd say, oh, he was a wonderful man, you know, your granddad. He did so much for this or that, or he was such a towering intellect, or he inspired me to do this, or he made that happen. And actually, that's a really lovely thing to hear. I guess it's probably quite common, isn't it, when you go to a funeral service for a loved one who has faded in front of your eyes, to be reminded of the fact that they were someone who was important.
And not by Lord Attenborough normally, though, is it?
No, it's not normally by Lord Attenborough, no.
No. That makes it very special, doesn't it?
It does. So the funeral service, which was here, that was just so beautiful. It was gorgeous. It was when I was in the middle of my second year exams at university, and we were called down to Scilly for the funeral. Of course, nothing would have stopped us from coming. So I remember revising on the beach in the morning and then getting on my glad rags and going along to the parish church for the service, which was really moving. And it was kind of low-key as much as that kind of service can be. I do remember that Tony Blair was there as leader of the opposition at the time. So this must have been 1995. And there were a few other Labour Party people, but mostly it was Islanders and people who had known him here who were there. And that was just a lovely service. And then after the service, he was carried by groups of people. His coffin was carried over to the old town churchyard. But that was quite a feat. He was a big man, even, you know, at his smallest, and he must have been quite a weight to be carried all the way from one church to the other one and laid to rest in the graveyard. But that was, I just remember it being an incredibly hot day, and actually much stiller than usual. There's normally a breeze, isn't there, wherever you go in Scilly. But I just remember walking up the hill and then walking down the other side and just thinking, wow. And people were waiting all the way along there to see us, and it was really special. So that was the funeral. The service at Westminster Abbey was obviously a much bigger thing. That happened a few months later, and that was lovely in its own way. I remember Prince Charles was there, so Richard Attenborough, as I said, and just lots of, you know, lots of famous people. I remember seeing John Major sitting nearby me, and my sister and I, who were both quite keen musicians, in fact we were both studying music at the time at different universities, we sang a duet as part of that service. And that was quite a big thing, to stand up in Westminster Abbey in front of hundreds of people with Prince Charles just in the corner of my eye. I was trying not to look at him too much, but, and, you know, sing. So yeah.
Interesting, all those people that could have come here as well.
Well,
Prince Charles, John Major comes here.
Yes, that's true. Yes, he does, doesn't he? And Prince Charles was here recently. So, yeah.
Movers and shakers gravitate to
Scilly. I know, that it's obviously the place to be, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your memories of your granddad.
That's my pleasure.
Thank you, Kath.